KSDP, 830 AM in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in Falls Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Accutan, Alaska.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A project bringing solar energy to the Wind River Reservation has hit some road bumps due to pauses in federal funding. But as Wyoming Public Radio's Hannah Haberman reports, the team's searching for other ways to move forward.
Energize Wind River is poised to set up standalone solar systems and bring electricity to roughly 40 Eastern Shoshone homes. But
the but would be that our construction funding is currently on hold pending review.
That's project director Levi Purdom. He says about $2 million of funding is paused. Even though the project has funding for training, employees, and outreach, it's unable to buy or install the solar equipment. Purdom is optimistic that the funding will eventually come through. But for now, the group secured a $20,000 grant from the Nature Conservancy.
They wanted to support our non-governmental fundraising efforts. So the intent is to hire and fund a fundraising specialist.
Energize Wind River still plans to start construction this spring if they're able to raise enough money. Other tribal nations across the Mountain West are facing similar issues amid budget cuts by the Trump administration. I'm Hannah Haberman.
Marine species like salmon and humpback whales might be becoming more frequent fixtures in the Arctic, especially as sea ice becomes less reliable from climate change. For residents in Alaska's most northern communities, it can mean changes to subsistence. The shifts in migration are also fascinating scientists. KNBA's Alaska Desk reporter Alona Nyden has more.
Catching salmon in the North Slope village of Kaktovik was unheard of not too long ago. But as resident Robert Thompson says, some fishermen now see salmon more regularly. About 5 years ago, Thompson caught a dozen salmon, a small but noticeable number, he says.
Before it was unusual and people would talk about it, but somebody got a salmon, but now it's fairly common.
Fishermen, hunters, and researchers gathered at the Alaska Marine Science Symposium in Anchorage back in January to discuss changing migration patterns of several fish species and marine animals. One of the conference presenters was Elizabeth McClindley, a graduate student from Bethel who grew up fishing for salmon. For a year, Lindley and other researchers tracked temperatures in the Anaktuvik River, which runs through gates of the Arctic National Park and Preserve.
The temperature conditions, it seems like they are survivable.
Less ice might also mean new territory for humpback whales. Oceanographer Kate Stafford says data from local whalers and aerial surveys points to more humpbacks visiting the Chukchi Sea in recent years. In Utqiagvik, humpbacks were sighted only twice before 2021 and 2 to 3 times in years after that. Then, last fall, researchers saw more than 25 whales feeding close together for 2 days in a row.
We came across what I would call humpback palooza.
Utqiagvik whaler Michael Donovan says he did not witness the humpback palooza, but he has seen a few humpbacks during his fall hunts. He says that he and other whalers are worried that humpbacks might be competing for krill and copepods with bowheads, the staple subsistence resource in his community.
Well, definitely they're an invasive species. You know, they come in and eat the same food that our bowheads eat.
Donovan and other hunters say they're supportive of scientists collecting data on whales other than bowheads, which are growing their presence in warming waters in the Arctic. In Anchorage, I am Alona Nyden.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by Sanofsky Chambers Law, championing tribal sovereignty and Native American rights since 1976, from opioids litigation to treaty rights to tribal self-governance, with offices in Washington, D.C., New Mexico, California, and Alaska. Sanofsky Chambers Law.
Support by Amerind, Indian Country's 100% tribally owned insurance partner. Information on property, liability, workers' compensation, and commercial auto needs at amerind.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
When the people no longer believe that the system of justice is there for them, what do we have in this country?
Senator Murkowski tells Alaska lawmakers that President Trump is going too far. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, March 18th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, state senators consider investing in long overdue school maintenance.
Our schools throughout the state, regardless of whether they are rural or urban, are likely not in a properly maintained state.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
If domestic violence has touched your life, know that you are not alone. You have the power to break free and build a future filled with love and respect. There's hope and help waiting for you. For free and confidential support, visit notaloneak.org. to speak to someone who's trained to help. Every Alaskan deserves to feel safe. This message sponsored by the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault.
Support for public radio comes from the communities we serve. Whether you give as an individual member or through your business, know that your contribution makes possible programming that informs, inspires, and entertains. We thank you for the role you play in your public radio station.
Senator Lisa Murkowski says President Trump is testing the limits of his power. In a speech to the legislature today, Alaska's senior Republican senator said the president has gone too far during his first 2 months back in office. Trump has frozen funding that Congress approved. He's moved to shutter agencies created by law. He's fired thousands of federal workers across dozens of agencies. And Murkowski says she's disturbed by the cuts to the federal workforce.
These terminations are indiscriminate. And many, we're now learning, are unlawful. And they're being made regardless of performance and with little understanding of the function and the value of each position.
Federal courts have reversed some of Trump's moves, though it's not always clear how faithfully his administration abides by those orders. Just this weekend, Trump administration officials refused to stop a flight deporting alleged members of a Venezuelan gang without an opportunity to present their case to a court. Trump officials argue the judge's order came too late, though flight records reviewed by news organizations indicate that's not true. Murkowski told state lawmakers that legislators have a duty to assert their and the court's authority under the Constitution. She said there are plenty of reasons to deport gang members, but she says the government still has to give the accused due process.
So we got to stand up, and we have to make sure that it is understood that we are all separate but equal branches of government. When the court's orders are defied, that weakens our courts. When the people no longer believe that the system of justice is there for them. What do we have in this country?
Some commentators have described the administration's apparent defiance of a federal court order as a constitutional crisis. Murkowski says that's not how she sees it, at least not yet. But she's worried her Republican colleagues in Congress, who lead both the House and Senate, might not stand up even if Trump openly and clearly ignores a court order. Here she is responding to a question from a conservative legislator asking whether there's any chance that Congress might trim back Trump's executive authority.
Is it possible for the legislative branch to act on this? Yes. Do I see that happening with the current construct? No.
Murkowski says she's been criticized harshly for standing up to the president, who has vowed retribution against his enemies, and she says that's why others are staying silent. State lawmakers are set to take an up or down vote tomorrow on Governor Mike Dunleavy's plans to create a state agriculture department. As Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone reports, the idea has lost some traction as the legislature attempts to deal with a budget deficit of about $500 million.
Dunleavy announced an executive order in December that would split the existing Division of Agriculture out from the Department of Natural Resources. Alaska is just one of two states without a cabinet-level agriculture department, and Dunleavy has pitched it as a way to give farming interests more influence in policy decisions. The governor says supply chain issues during the COVID-19 pandemic highlighted how important it is for the state to grow more of its own food.
It was at that moment that myself and a number of other leaders in the state of Alaska decided that we were going to make agriculture and growing things here in Alaska a priority.
That's from a video the governor's office released earlier this month urging Alaskans to contact their legislators and ask them to support his executive order. The state constitution gives the legislature the right to review the governor's orders. Last year, a joint session of the House and Senate rejected 8 out of the 12 of his with a majority vote. Lawmakers started to examine the idea of a standalone agriculture department early this year as the legislative session got underway. And at least to start, many seemed to welcome it. But the mood has changed in the meantime, not least because of the state's $500 million plus deficit. The initial cost estimate for an ag department was $2.7 million. But as skepticism grew, Dunleavy revised the plan, pitching it as cost neutral. Some lawmakers, though, including from the governor's own party, say they're not convinced. Fairbanks Republican Representative Will Stapp says he's not sure how they'll avoid growing the deficit.
I'm certainly not opposed to the idea of a Department of Agriculture. We just kind of want to know if you're actually going to get agriculture or you're just going to put people on payroll.
At a news conference last week, Senate President Gary Stevens, a Kodiak Republican, says he also has concerns. He says he and the House Speaker recently called the governor and asked him to withdraw the executive order. Stevens says he'd rather see the legislature approach the concept the traditional way, by passing a bill.
A bill makes much more sense than an executive order. Executive order is something we have no control over. We can vote it up or down. We have no input. We can't amend it. We can't change it at all. The advantage of a bill is that we can get into the details and figure out what's best.
It's unclear which way the vote might go. Senator Shelley Hughes, a Palmer Republican who's been interested in food security issues for years, says she hopes the legislature doesn't vote it down. She says confusion over what the department would cost, how it would be paid for, and what exactly it would do are not making for an easy sales pitch.
I'm not sure we can overcome them in the short time that we have.
Among other things, Hughes blames, quote, misstatements by the governor. In another promotional video, Dunleavy said he expected proceeds from crops to help pay for the new department. A staffer later said the governor was referring to land sales, not taxes. The Alaska House and Senate are scheduled to vote on the Agriculture Department order on Wednesday. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Eric Stone.
For decades, dozens of rural school districts have been asking the state for money to fix a range of serious health and safety problems. Only a small percentage of that money has come through. After KYUK and ProPublica launched a project earlier this month highlighting the public health and safety crisis inside Alaska's rural public schools, lawmakers on the powerful Senate Finance Committee discussed some of those issues Friday. KYUK's Emily Schwing reports.
Superintendents like Southeast Island School District's Rod Morrison are finally feeling heard by state lawmakers.
Excuse me for 1 minute. I brought an item I'd like to show you. You'll see that it almost caught on fire.
Morrison lifted a large light bulb from a plastic shopping bag and showed it to members of Alaska's Senate Finance Committee during a regular meeting in Juneau. The top of it was covered in burn marks.
So this happened in 6 of our gymnasium lights, and it was obvious the fire suppression system was not operable.
Morrison's district has made at least 17 funding requests to the state for financial assistance to replace the fire suppression system in the school at Thorn Bay, a small community northwest of Ketchikan. Senate Finance Committee co-chair Lyman Hoffman, a Democrat from Bethel, said leaving conditions as they are will likely result in litigation.
I would assume that we're on the brink of another Casale 2.0 coming to us that may be more costly to the state than if we came forward and tried to do something about the condition of these schools.
Casale was a successful lawsuit brought by a group of Alaska Native parents back in 1997. They argued that Alaska's education funding system violated its constitution and the Federal Civil Rights Act. In 2011, a judge agreed and ruled that the legislature had to find a more equitable way to fund infrastructure in rural school districts. KYUK and ProPublica have spent the last year visiting rural schools, and we found the same kinds of conditions that spurred the case. Leaking roofs, failing heating systems, and broken sewer lines. State Education Department Finance Manager Lori Weed told lawmakers on Friday that Alaska just does not have the money to invest in its school maintenance backlog.
I would say that our schools throughout the state, regardless of whether they are rural or urban, are likely not in a properly maintained state.
This year, rural and urban schools have requested nearly $800 million for construction and maintenance from the state. The governor's budget does not include any capital investment for schools. That stands out to Senator and committee co-chair Bert Stedman, a Republican from Sitka.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One thing that concerns me, I think the administration has requested zero deferred maintenance.
Yes.
Zero. And isn't there an airplane in there that's requested in the capital budget somewhere?
There is.
So my concern is the priorities of the request to the legislature are questionable.
Republican Governor Mike Dunleavy has requested $6.5 million for a plane he says will be used for emergency response and for the executive branch.
We've crossed the Rubicon of sanity here when it comes to school maintenance, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Jesse Keel, a Democrat from Juneau, is frustrated by the state's lack of capital investment.
And it sounds like the efficient frontier is fires and insurance claims. When I look at the financial incentives, that's what I see.
Senators didn't make any final financing decisions for schools on Friday. Several noted they were unable to ask follow-up questions to Education Department staff because the Education Commissioner was absent and her staff left the meeting immediately after they made their presentation. In Anchorage, I'm Emily Schwing.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, residents in coastal villages call for a return of fishing permits to their communities.
We used to be, a strong fishing fleet that took pride in going out and going fishing.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Talk one-on-one with experts on mental health, nutrition, pharmacology, surgery, childcare, and much more on Line One, your health connection. Join our hosts as they discuss the health topics that matter to Alaskans with their guests and live callers. Email questions before, during, or after the live broadcast to line1@alaskapublic.org. That's Line One, your health connection, weekly on your local public radio station.
Employees fired last month from the agency that oversees federal fisheries in Alaska were reinstated Monday morning. That's in response to a federal judge's ruling that the Trump administration's mass layoffs of thousands of workers were unlawful. The Alaska Desk's Theo Greenlee reports that while Alaska fisheries employees might have been reinstated, that doesn't necessarily mean they'll be returning to work.
In Alaska, the agencies that were hit by the Trump administration's layoffs include the National Park Service, U.S. Forest Service, and the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. But two separate rulings came down Thursday that called the across-the-board firings unlawful. In one of them, a U.S. district judge in Maryland ordered 18 departments to reinstate the fired employees. The Department of Commerce, which oversees NOAA, complied, but it placed those employees in a paid non-duty status. Rebecca Howard is one of 13 employees at NOAA's Alaska Fisheries Science Center who were fired last month. She received an email Monday morning saying that she had been reinstated, but she says that doesn't quite mean she's going back to work.
They have basically placed us in like a paid status, but we're not returning to work necessarily. And so no one's really sure exactly what's going on.
Howard says the process has been confusing. Even her supervisor wasn't aware of the details.
To be honest, my supervisor wasn't informed. I had to inform her, as was the case for everybody kind of up the chain at the Alaska Fisheries Science Center. I don't think that anyone was told when these would be coming out.
The government has strict protocols for federal layoffs due to things like budget cuts or agency restructuring. Employees let go under these circumstances receive certain protections, like priority consideration for reemployment, severance pay, or retirement benefits. But last month's mass terminations cited poor performance, stripping those employees' protections. Howard says the agency made it clear their reinstatement could be temporary if the department successfully overturns the judge's ruling.
It's kind of harsh, honestly, because it basically tells us that they may retroactively fire us later if they win in this court case.
The temporary order expires at the end of the month, and a hearing is scheduled March 26th. In Unalaska, I'm Theo Greenlee.
Limits on Alaska's commercial fisheries were established in the early 1970s to ensure the industry could sustain itself. But researchers and Sea Alaska shareholders say that's backfired in rural native villages where many family-run boats have raised their hooks and nets for good. And as KTOO's Alex Solomon reports, they're calling for change.
A half century ago, Angoon's Harbor was packed with small, family-operated boats that caught fish on hook and line, called trolling, or with a big net called a purse seine. Salmon and halibut fed mouths and bank accounts. Peter Duncan, mayor of Angoon, remembers those days. But it's not the same anymore. He says that fisheries regulations have caused
devastating changes. You just don't find a troller in our harbors anymore.
He says that's made people more dependent on government help, like food stamps. Duncan grew up fishing on his father's seiner in the small Tlingit village on Admiralty Island. He graduated to his own troll boat and commercially fished until the early 1990s, when he says he couldn't make a living that way anymore. Folks weren't catching enough salmon to make money, so permits became more valuable to sell. Many of those permits left the island, and with them went the means for the village to sustain itself.
It's sad to know that at one time, we used to be, you know, a strong fishing fleet that took pride in going out and going fishing.
Duncan's story isn't unique. This reality has unfolded in most rural villages throughout the Gulf of Alaska, as first reported by the Northern Journal. In part, it's an unintended consequence of a law that took effect in 1975 called the Limited Entry Act, which allowed the state to issue a set number of permits for each fishery. The goal was to address a sustainability problem. At the time, salmon populations were plummeting while commercial fishermen multiplied. The idea was simple. Cap the number of people fishing, and there will be enough to go around. But that's not what happened in native villages. Courtney Carruthers, an environmental anthropologist at the University of Alaska, Fairbanks, led a study of more than 3,000 Sea Alaska shareholders and descendants about the community impacts of fisheries limitation policies. She found that Sea Alaska villages owned half as many fishing vessels in 2019 than they owned in 1978. And commercial salmon permits had dwindled by more than a third since 1975.
This is not good public policy if our communities in the Gulf of Alaska, surrounded by the ocean with, you know, thousands of years of fishing knowledge and history within one generation are cut out. I mean, this is an absolute crisis.
Joe Nelson is interim president of the Sea Alaska Corporation, representing Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian interests in Southeast Alaska. His airy corner office in downtown Juneau looks out over Gastineau Channel. Clouds trundle into the snowy peaks of Douglas Island. Glossy magazine copies of Carruthers' study are spread out on a table. The report points to a loss of fishing access as one of the main reasons people leave their rural villages.
That's all been going one way, and that's migration out of most of the fleet and most of the permits.
That out-migration, he says, leads to schools and other services closing down. Those who stay behind are aging out of the industry without enough young people to pick it up, he says.
So the whole economy just shrinks. It's much bigger than a single fisherman that decides not to show up anymore.
Nelson says that the state needs to tweak the limited entry system so that native communities can fish commercially without going bankrupt. When limited entry started, the price to fish for salmon skyrocketed from hundreds of dollars to thousands.
So today, a seine permit in Southeast Alaska is worth about $140,000, and a drift permit is worth about $44,000.
Those numbers vary, depending on how well a fishery is doing. Johnson says that while the Limited Entry Act helped make Alaska's fisheries more sustainable, it created this new problem. Now, the commission is talking internally about potential solutions.
Such as making it administratively easier to transfer a permit to another rural resident in the same area that you live in.
Researchers say there could be room for creating a new class of permit, such as an entry-level or small-scale permit, to get people started. But any changes would have to come through the state legislature. There's also a potential federal pathway for recognizing indigenous rights to fish, which were not compensated through the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. SeaLaska is not advocating for specific policy changes just yet. Nelson says there must be open public discussions that look at the slew of ideas. But first, he wants state officials to recognize that there is a problem. In Juneau, I'm Alex Solomon.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
GCI, providing telecommunication services to tribal health organizations and nonprofit rural health providers, enabling telehealth services for Alaskans. More at gci.com/healthcare. Did you know 100 years ago, the chances of a baby dying in Alaska before their first birthday was almost 10%? Because of advances in public health like sanitation, access to clean water, vaccines for children, and access to health care in rural communities, the chances of dying are now less than 1%. To learn more about what the Alaska Department of Health is doing to improve Alaskans' health for the next 100 years, visit health.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health.
If you love what you hear on your public radio station, consider becoming a member.
Anchorage will hold its next municipal election Tuesday, April 1st. Ballots went out by mail last week. Half of the seats on the Anchorage Assembly are up on the ballot, with four incumbents not running for re-election. There are also two school board seats up for election. A list of interviews with the candidates running for office is available at our website, alaskapublic.org. Voters will also decide on a host of bonds, including one for roughly $33 million that would go towards several Anchorage school district projects. There are also two proposed tax levies that would fund replacement vehicles for the police department and for snow hauling and plowing. Voters can drop off their ballots at one of 18 secure drop boxes across the municipality or cast them by mail, but they must be postmarked no later than April 1st. Voters can also vote in person at one of three Anchorage Voter Centers located at City Hall, the Lusac Library, and the Eagle River Town Center. Juneau resident Hune Lance Twitchell won an Emmy Saturday for Not a Mascot, an episode he wrote for the TV show Molly of Denali. Juneau residents welcomed Twitchell at the airport Sunday night with song and dance. The winning episode follows the show's main character, Molly Babre, as she learns that a competing basketball team has a mascot based on indigenous stereotypes. She then helps the team find a new mascot. She then helps the team find a new mascot. This is the second Emmy nomination from Twitchell and his first award. Wearing a Chilkat robe, Twitchell thanked his supporters at the airport and said they can accomplish great things together.
I am so thankful for this opportunity to stand on the backs of all the storytellers who brought us here, all the people who work on this wonderful show. It takes so many hands to do something like this.
Twitchell is also an author and professor of Alaska Native Languages at the University of Alaska Southeast. Molly of Denali received a nomination for Outstanding Interactive Media this year as well. This is the show's first Emmy Award. Well, a Japanese theatrical musical performance group is touring Alaska and kicked off the first show in Wrangell on Saturday. Unit Sozo is from Portland, Oregon. KSDK's Colette Zarnicki attended the event and found that the performers exposed the depths of their identities to this multimedia performance.
I am from Iwakuni City, Yamaguchi Prefecture, Japan.
That is Toru Watanabe opening up for Unit Suzel's performance called Constant State of Otherness. But before Unit Suzel performed, the Wrangell Cooperative Association greeted them on stage with their tribal psalms and dances. Yeah. Michelle Fuji is one of Unit Suzul's co-directors, along with her partner Toru Watanabe. The group performs Japanese folk dance and taiko, or Japanese drums. They also weave in film.
DJ.
Yeah, mommy.
Yeah, mommy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fuji says Suzul can be described in three ways: creation, imagination, and being noisy.
We combine these three words in the aspiration to be creative, to be imaginative with the drum, and hope that we are heard throughout our communities.
She says their performance, Constant State of Otherness, went through a deep creative process.
We started with our own personal stories. It was a multi-year process. We also worked with a lot of different high school students throughout five different cities. So even in the show, you'll hear woven quotes of the high school students speaking about themselves.
Dad, are you worried? Nihai, mama.
Fuji says self-identity plays a really big part in the storytelling of the performance, which can be seen and heard throughout.
I am from the stolen lands of the native Hawaiians.
She says, although the original question that developed the performance was, who am I? It's also not just about themselves when it comes to identity.
So much of who we are is based on our upbringing, our ancestors, our traditions, all these things, these rituals that exist in our lives because it was from generations and generations of practice.
She says Unit Suzul primarily stays closer to home in Portland. They do a lot of regional projects, like working with inmates at Oregon State Penitentiary.
This is sunsetting our touring right now because we just sort of go where the project is flowing. The most upcoming projects for us will be very much close to home.
Sylvia Edifa helps organize the annual Bearfest Festival in Wrangell. She says she found out about Unit Suzul through the Alaska State Council on the Arts and helped bring them to town.
I look for opportunities that we can actually make and something that's different, that has a big impact, something that is special. And when I find that opportunity, we jump on it.
She says bringing Unit Suzul to Wrangell is a way to raise money for Bearfest, which happens in late July. She brought the performing arts group to Wrangell with a combination of grants and money raised by Bearfest in previous years. Edifa says she always tries to make sure the performers she brings in visits Wrangell's schools as part of an educational outreach component.
I think that they did a great job at the school, at the elementary school. The program was just a little different than it was at the high school, and it was appropriate for both schools. And this was different than both of those. And I think for these times and the way it was presented, it was very appropriate.
Unit Suzul is the fourth event Bearfest has brought in to support the festival itself. The other three included a melodica performance, a jazz manouche band, and a comedian. In Wrangell, I'm Colette Zarnicki.
Unit Suzul will be traveling to other parts of Alaska, including Anchorage, Talkeetna, Homer, and Bethel, later this month. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Eric Stone and Alex Solomon in Juneau, Emily Schwing in Anchorage, Theo Greenlee in Unalaska, Simon Lopez in Homer, and Colette Zarnicki in Wrangell. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde. We had production help from Annie Feit, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
ConocoPhillips Alaska, building the next generation of Alaska's workforce through investments in education and vocational training. ConocoPhillips Alaska, committed to Alaska for more than 50 years. Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight from oversized equipment to small packages for commercial or residential. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.
Very good.
you what's exactly on my mind, girl. My big heart leads me right to you. Every time the phone rings, I pray to God that it's you, girl. Every time I close my eyes, a vision of your face always pops into my mind.
Sometimes I feel like an alien, living in a world so far away. Sometimes I feel like I'm losing it, walking like a zombie from the grave. Sometimes they take all I have to give, trying to see the light that's shining through. Some days I can take this crazy world when I'm trying to get to you. I can try to be Superman, stop a train with a single hand. I can climb to a mountaintop, fly the world like an astronaut. Will they kill me after all? Sometimes we have to stand tall. Sometimes I hear what I wanna hear, deafened by the voices in my head. Some nights I just fall down on my knees, thinking that I'm better off dead. Sometimes I see what I wanna see, blinded from the truth in front of me. Some days I don't know what I'm gonna do when I'm trying to get to you. I can try to be Superman, stop a train with a single hand. I can climb to a mountaintop, fly the world.
His arms are around me and his tongue in my eyes. It's still calm and quiet now. My precious, don't struggle like that. I will only know you. But it's much too late to get away. Turn on the light. The Spider-Man is having you for dinner tonight. And I feel like I'm being eaten by a thousand chilling furry holes. I know that in the morning I will wake up in the shivering cold. The Spider-Man is always thank you.
face, pull them down, don't hide away, like an ocean that you can't see but you can smell, and the sound of waves crash down. I am no Superman, I have no reason for you, I am no hero, oh that's for sure, but I do know one thing, it's where you are, it's where I belong, I do know where you go, it's where I wanna be, where are you going, where do you go, are you looking for answers to questions under the stars, well if along the way you are growing weary, you can rest with me until a brighter day and you're okay, I am no Superman,